Okay, everybody. I hope you all are doing well. I know there's a lot of stuff going on around the community and the Jewish community at large. We'll probably have a lot of time to put some of our thoughts together for all the different things that we could use a little bit more clarity on over the course of the next couple of hours between now and the end of Shabbos. Hopefully, we'll touch on a lot of those different issues. But first and foremost, Learning in the Shul this week has been graciously sponsored by the Dombeck family in memory of David Chaim ben Shlomo, and by the Joyanda family in memory of Asher ben Elazar Halevi. And of course, we hope that their neshama should have an aliyah, as well as a hope that all those who are sick within the community and the Jewish community at large should be able to achieve a refuah shleima bekarov and be able to all go join together so that we can stop doing this on Zoom and start doing these things together in person. Just a couple of minutes ago, somebody just texted me, another one of my rabbinic colleagues, that he too is now down on the action. So we certainly need to take care of ourselves, make sure that we're all healthy. Let's talk a little bit tonight. I want to begin a mini series in the next couple of weeks to talk a little bit about the Makos. After all, every year we look at the Makos from a perspective, but each one of the episodes, each one of the pieces of the Makos, come together, and if we looked at them through the eye of biblical people, places, and things, we might derive a tremendous amount of depth within each of the Makos. So tonight, I thought I'd start in honor of my dear friend Kermit, who is sitting on the screen in front of you. I thought maybe we'd talk about the Tzardeya. There's so much about Tzardeya that somehow God wanted us to understand, and so in that regard. And so in that regard, I thought maybe what we would do is, start with the Tzardeya, and take it from there and see where we proceed. So I apologize, the screen just went off for a second. We're just going to bring it back up, and then we'll go back to where we were. There we go. Okay. So we will use our classic biblical people, places, and things style. And to do so, let's get started. What do we know about the Tzardeya? So let's go back and look at the Pesukim, and we'll be able to see it inside and be able to achieve a tremendous amount. First of all, like most of the Makos, obviously the third, the sixth, and the ninth don't show this style, but like most of the Makos, they begin with a warning. So in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Chavav, Hashem speaks to Moshe, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Bo el Paro, come to Paro, Viamartai love, Ko amar Hashem, and he says to him, so says Hashem, Shlach es ami v'yavduni, send my nation and they should serve me. Now you'll notice that Paro is told to send a nation, right? V'imayina tal shaleach, and if you, by the way, aren't going to send my nation out, I'm going to send tzfardim. I'm going to send these tzfardeyas throughout your entire borders. So when it comes to me, Hashem says, send my nation. When I start talking about you, I don't talk about you and your nation. I tend to make it personal. Is there any difference between the two? And then of course it continues. Hashem does a huge buildup through Moshe. And he tells him, "V'sharat ha'yor tzvardeim, the yor is going to spit out tzvardeim. V'alu vo v'veisecha, and they're going to come up and they're going to go into your home. U'v'chadar mishkavcha v'amitasecha u'v'veis avadecha u'v'amecha u'v'tanurecha u'v'misharosecha, and they're going to go into the house of your slaves and then in your nation." So first, it goes through this whole buildup, your whole gavul and your house and your bedroom and your bed and your avadim, and then only then uvamecha, right? Only then when it comes to your nation. Hashem wants the nation first, but when he talks about the Egyptian nation, it comes much later. Question number one, why is it so detailed with the tzfardim and the nation is only mentioned way down the list, right before uvetanurecha b'misharosecha, right before the ovens and the kneading troughs? And then Hashem sums it up, and he says, "Uvacha, uvamcha, v'chol avadecha yalu atzvardim." It's going to come into you, and it's going to come onto your nation. It's going to come onto your slaves. There's a lot of repeats in the command over here, but it seems that Hashem is asking for something big, right? Shlach es ami, And then Hashem's response is very direct and pointed. I'm going to go after you and you and you and your stuff. And then only as an afterthought, the nation is brought up. So that's question number one. Is there a significance to that? Question number two, let's look at what happens when the Tzfardim actually come. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, and he says, Amor al Aharon, go tell Aharon, Teyas Yadcha b'matcha, go ahead and take your staff. And we know that Al HaNaros, Al HaYorim, Al HaGamim, right? Go hit your staff on the rivers and on the Nile and on the swamps. V'halas HaTzfardim al Eretz Mitzrayim, and bring forth the Tzfardim. So Vayet Aharon es yado al Meimei Mitzrayim. Aharon certainly struck his hand onto the waters of Egypt. And we know, as Rashi tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu refused to do it because he had benefited. And so Hashem did not have Moshe do it. So this way Moshe would be able to show his Hakara Satov. But here's what happens when Aharon goes ahead and he proceeds. Vatala Tzfardea. The Tzfardea came out. Right? Now look, when Hashem spoke to Moshe and he warned him, it says, V'sharat Hayor Tzfardeim. How many? More than one. The plural is used. Tzfardeim in Pasuk Chavkas. But here, when it comes out, what do we see? Batal HaTzfardeya. One frog came out. We know there's something to be learned there. We'll see what. Many of us may already have a hint. Batachas HaZeretz Mitzrayim. This one frog, or this one Tzfardeya, well, you haven't defined that Tzfardeya yet. And it came in and it covered the entirety of the land of Egypt. That's a pretty serious coverage for something that big. And sure enough, Paro's sorcerers were able to do the same thing. They brought the Tzfardim. So when Aharon does it in the singular. When the sorcerers do it, they do it in the multiple, right? Similar, but the reverse of what we saw in the warning. And the warning was very personal to Paro as an individual. And when it came to Bnei Yisrael, it was the nation, it was the group. Now, when the Jewish guy, the representative of the nation, he brings up one Tzfardeya. But when we talk about the Chartumim, the Egyptian side, what do we see? They're bringing up many. So sure enough, how does this work out for everybody? Vayikra Paro Pasuk Dalid, the Moshe Oli Aharon. A Paro calls to Moshe and Aharon. Vayomer Hatiru El Hashem. He says to them, Daven to your God. V'yaser HaTzfardeim Mimenu Mi'ami. Get rid of the frogs from me and from my nation. Why can't you say Mimenu? Isn't that much more logical? Let's get rid of the frogs from us. V'shlacha Sa'am Yizbechu Leilo L'Hashem. Moshe says to Paro, how much longer should we go so that it goes into the Yehor, it leaves the land of Egypt and only goes into the Yehor, right? So Paro says, I want it to happen tomorrow. So what happens? He says, yeah, that'll be the way that you say it. So that you know that there's no one like our God. And sure enough, what happens? The Tzfardim, they will leave you, they will leave your home, they'll leave your servants, they'll leave your nation, and only stay in the Yor. This Pasuk Zion is so critical. Because look what's happening here. Again, this plague affects the individual Paro, his house, his servants, and then only then again, a reference to the nation. And so again, the question we keep seeing, at least as far as Tzfardeya is concerned, we seem to find that there's a connection, there seems to be a disconnect. And then we also say, Rak by Yor Tisha'arna, there's something about keeping the frogs in the Yor. Why? What's the message? And sure enough, Ayitze Moshe bi'arom me'em paro, v'ayitzak Moshe l'Hashem. So Moshe and Aharon leave Paro, and Moshe cries out to Hashem because of the frogs. V'yas Hashem kidvar Moshe, and Hashem does what Moshe says. V'yamusu ha-tzfardeim, and the tzfardeim died from the homes and from the courtyards and from the fields. And of course, they tried to gather them up in piles, and the land began to stink, right? And that's the way it goes. Now, besides all the other questions we've raised, I have to ask another question. And that's because I see my good friend, Dr. Wenger, which means that somewhere in the orbit, I'm sure that the other Dr. Wenger is present. And we have a rule called the Wenger Corollary. And what is that? That names pay a difference. And so therefore, what is a tzvardeya? So if you saw the graphic, both on the PowerPoint and also in the handout, in the Torah blast, we often associate the word tzvardeya with the word for a frog. But our dear friend Kermit will often show up at many a Seder, and we have the plastic frogs. Sometimes we have gummy frogs. Thank you, Dr. Wenger, right? Thank you, right? But is that really the correct definition of tzvardeim? So look at the Ibn Ezra. I bet you didn't know this one. Hamafarshim nechleku b'milas tzvardeim. The truth is that the commentaries disagree about what the definition of the word tzvardeya is. V'rabim amru shehu min dag shehanimsa b'mitzrayim v'yikari b'lashon arav al tamasach. Right? It's some sort of fish-like existence in Egypt called the al tamasach. We'll see what it's going to be called, and its civil build on it. V'yotze min ha'na'ar, it comes out of the river, v'choteif b'nei adam, and it steals the people. It captures people. That doesn't sound like a frog to me. Others say that it's like those things that you find near the rivers. They make a lot of noise, croaking. He says, Ibn Ezra says, I think that's the correct definition. Already in Ibn Ezra's time, there was probably an Ibn Ezra Wenger, right, who also had gummy frogs and plastic frogs and all sorts of other things to play with, right? And so he said, I think that that's the one that everybody knows. When you say, what's a tzvardeya, they don't think it's this al-tamasach, right, which we're going to give a word to in a moment, right? He says it's a frog. And so the question is it something that causes people, that causes people danger when they see it, or does it cause them a nuisance when they see it? So what is an al-tamasach? And what is the concern? And are these two positions of what a tzvardeya is, right? Noisy nuisance, frog, or this other thing that steals human beings, something else, we'll come up with an idea. Are these two exclusive or are they not? And so the Netziv from Naftali to Yehuda Berlin says, not so fast. He says, "V'chaba amchaba chola abadecha, yalu hatzvardeim, Gambi osam bevatecha, shama yosifu lalos." Excuse me, I forgot to unplug the phone. Yes, I get spam calls like the rest of you, right? So we should know what happens. He says, Gambi osam bevatecha, shama yosifu lalos. He says in source number 4, he says, even when they are in your home, they're going to continue to move. They're going to continue to reproduce. They were a nuisance. They just continued to reproduce in the bedrooms of the kings. It's going to be, when we see the Am of Paro, we're talking about the bourgeoisie class. We're talking about the royal class, the people who had the fancier homes. Yishum dechashi v'yoser. But that's all nice. V'zeh ha'maka ha'yiseiro lo shalto b'chol amei Paro. Ela bot chilo b'shomri roshu b'abadav heima sarei yo'atzav. He says, you should just know that there was an additional level of punishment. The plague was exceptionally worse the higher you were in social standing, right? In what way? The higher your social standing, the more that the Tzfardim would continue to reproduce. So that's point number one, the Nitziv says. Then he says, V'nei yadua deo shonos bein mefarsh mazal, imhayu Tzfardim min yadua hamashchitz, is this altamasach that could be dangerous, hanimsa od hayom b'yaor, which can be found in the Nile today, v'nikra, and he says, what's it called? Look at the parenthesis, crack, a dial. You see that? It's right there. The Nikra crocodile. So he says, maybe is it supposed to be a crocodile? Ohu min hanimsa berube anaros v'tzoakim u'machakarin, or is it more like a frog? Ulefid varenu says the Nitziv, based on what we're saying, shnei pirushim emes, both are possible. B'chol eretz Mitzrayim hayamin hasheni v'lo ishrisu. Throughout the rest of Egypt, there were frogs. Ach bebeis paro v'amo v'abadav yatzu min harishon min hayor. The in Paro's house, that's where the first one came out. V'hayu mashchisim d'ksibet helam yishlach bam arov v'yochleim utzfardeya v'tashchisein. He says, in the same way that the arov came along, the wild animals in plague number four, if you look in Tehillim, the tzfardeya is brought out over there. And that's Zenechla B'lashon Ya'alua Tzfardim, I know Hama'ulim Sheba Tzfardim. The Nitziv says that the Tzfardeya is a step up, the crocodile are a higher level of Makkah. And it only, you have to really be of a higher class to be able to be involved in that Makkah. So far, we have already debated what the goal of the Tzfardeya was, right? And what they are. Are they crocodiles? Are they frogs? And it sounds like the Nitziv says it's possible they were both. They were evolutionarily considered one and of the same. Just if you were a higher person in standing in the class system of Mitzrayim, the worse the Tzfardeya would come and get you. You'd get the more dangerous version. What's its message? And what are we supposed to take from that? So let's hold that to the side and use it to bring it back into our understanding. Let me stop for a moment and bring you back to a different point we raised before. The Gemara in Sanhedrin picks up on the point that we picked up on before. When Aaron came along and he took out his stick, the pasuk says, "Vatal hatzfardeya vatechases eretz Mitzrayim." The tzfardeya came and it went ahead and it jumped out all over the land of Egypt. Amar Rabbi Lazar says, Tzfardeya achas haisa. It was really only one Tzfardeya. Umalas kol eretz Mitzrayim. And it came along and it encompassed the entire land of Egypt. Ketanai, Rabbi Akiva omer Tzfardeya achas haisa umala kol eretz Mitzrayim. And Amar Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, Akiva malach haitzel hagada. Right? Rabbi Akiva was of the opinion it was one frog and it just came out. It was like a Loch Ness monster. Right? And Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah says, what are you doing here? Kalei midbarusecha, v'leich etzel negayim v'alos, tzfardei achas haisa, sharka lehem vein bo. What really happened was, yeah, one frog came out, and it whistled, and then it said, it whistled to call the other ones, and then all the frogs came swarming in. That's the way Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah saw it. So who cares if it was one, if it was more? What's the big deal? So let's look at the Medrash Rabba in source number 7. As kol gvulcha tzfardim, right? Chazal amru hamakul shehivi akadosh baruch ala mitzrim garam lahem shiasu shalom beinehem. You should just know that these makos forced the Egyptians to make peace with the people around them. Ketzad, how did that happen? Hayamachlokas bein b'nei kushu bein b'nei mitzrayim. There was a big argument between the people of Cush and Mitzrayim. Ha-mitzrim omrim ad kan chumenu. The Mitzrim said, our border goes over here. And ha-kushim omrim ad kan chumenu. They had a disagreement about a bit of land as to where the border was. But given Chaboa Tzfardim, when the Tzfardeya came along, asu shalom b'nehem, the peace was identified. Ha-gvul shahayu nechnasos le-sochau, If the frogs didn't go there, they knew it didn't go. It didn't belong to the Egyptians. It must have belonged to the Cushites, right? So far, it sounds like the Tzfardeya also was a peacemaker. What does that have to do with the first couple of things we learned? Just keeping score at home. So far we've seen that the Tzfardea was either a crocodile or a frog or both, depending on whether you assume like the two sides in the Ibn Ezra or like the third opinion, the Netziv, who says actually it depends where you were. So it sounds like it was a station in life sort of thing. We have a disagreement as to whether one Tzfardea was enough, Rabbi Akiva, or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says it was multiple. And now we have an understanding that the Tzfardeim made peace. Is there anything that unites these ideas together when Hashem sent the Makos? So the Medrash Rabbah continues in the next source, right? What exactly bothered the Mitzrayim about the Tzfardeim? I understand if we're talking about the higher level guys, it's hard to live when you've got crocodiles just reproducing all over your palace. But Vayitze Moshe Vayitzak al Hashem al Devar HaTzfardeim. Chazal Amru, Lo Dai Lahem LeMitzriyim HaShchasas HaTzfardeim, source 8, right? It wasn't enough for the Egyptians to see the destruction of the Tzfardea. Ela Shehaya Kolon Shel Tzfardeim Kasha Lahem Imakasan. The crazy noises of the Tzfardea were tougher than the Makkah itself. Shehayu Nechnasos Begufan V'Tzoakim B'Sochan. They would go into the bodies of the Egyptians. And it would just, Egyptian opens his mouth, and what would he hear? Croak, croak, right? Like sort of a bad chazan on a Shabbos or Yantif. Shenemar, al dvar ha-tzfardim, asher sam li paro, al dibur ha-tzfardim, right? And not only that, when they died, the Medrash says, they got nothing out of it, right? And in the same way that the Jewish people had to work for the Egyptians, mida kenegin mida, and they had to work in the garbage dumps, so too, and they got nothing out of it, so too Hashem brought the same onto the Egyptians as well. So we have to add those two elements together. And let's add one last element, and we'll put it together and start to make a suggestion over here. There is a medrash that came, that is quite famous. We quoted it in this week's Points to Ponder as well, where the medrash points out and says, that when the frogs jumped around, there were two extra places where they jumped. And where were the two extra places that they jumped? Into the kneading troughs and into the ovens. In fact, the Medrash in Tehillim points out that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, later in Jewish history, would determine that they too would have to be tossed into the ovens for Kiddush Hashem. And they did so by using the Tzfardeah as the proof. The Tzfardeim didn't turn around and didn't give in. When Hashem said they go everywhere, the Tzfardim jumped into the ovens, and they didn't allow themselves to be destroyed. And those were the ones, says the Medrash, that said that at the end, they were the ones who stayed in the or they didn't die in those big piles, right? And so therefore, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah said, if frogs who aren't commanded in Kiddush Hashem go ahead and give up their lives, then we most certainly should be able to give up our lives. So again, a lot of stuff we know about Tzfardim, but we haven't put it together. And honestly, as much as I love the explanation of crocodile versus frog, I still don't know what a Tzfardea is. See, the real truth is, the Wenger corollary says, it's in the name. And so take a look at source 10, and we'll start putting names together. Ma loshon Tzfardeya. The Psikta asked the question, what is a Tzfardeya? It's a Tzipor Haya Benilos Baldeya. It was a knowledgeable Tzipor. What's a Tzipor? A Tzipor is a bird, right? What are birds famous for? Either both for flying and for singing, right? Tziporim chirp. Frogs also chirp. They're sea chirpers, right? But there was something unique about frogs, because unlike birds, the frog is considered one that has knowledge. Baal Deya. Behem bo v'karu al shem ha-tzipor baal Deya. Tzfar Deya. Right? It's like sort of a Sesame Street game. Hence, Kermit the Frog. Tzipor Deya. Tzipor Deya. Tzipor Deya. Tzfar Deya. Share that one with Devorah later, Doc. Right? She'll like that one. But what does that mean? What was the importance of knowing Tzipor and Dea? What is the idea of the shrieker that makes noise? What's Dea? What is Dea? Dea is knowledge. There's a Gemara in the Dharma, a very critical Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Nakinan ain ani ela b'dea. You know what? When a person is truly impoverished, it's when he lacks knowledge. In fact, b'marava amri didabe kulabe. If you have knowledge, dea, you got it all. Dilo dabe, maybe. But if you don't have knowledge, you don't got nothing. Dakani machaser. If you acquire knowledge, you're missing nothing. Dalokani. If you don't have knowledge, makani. So what do you have? So and in fact, and so the tzvar dea, the whatever you want to call the tzvar dea, the tzipor dea, it has some sort of knowledge. What is the knowledge that it has? What's the critical lesson? This must be the secret to why Hashem chose to give the Egyptians this makkah. So you ready for it? Watch this. Amru al David HaMelech. They say when David HaMelech, b'shasha siyim sefer tilim zacha day toralav. When he finished writing 150 chapters of Tilim, he leaned back and he said, ah, Amar lefanav, he said, Ribono shalolam. He says, God, klum yesh davar ba'olam shamar shira kamosi. Is there anything in the world that sang Shira the way I just did for you? 150? Nobody can sing praises like me. This damna lo tzvardeya afas. So all of a sudden, as he's sitting there, sort of enjoying himself, a tzvardeya appears. And Amar lo, the tzvardeya turns to David and he says, Al tazuach daitcha alecha. Right? He says, don't let yourself get so haughty. Shani omer shira yoser mimcha. I sing much, much more Shira than you do, right? Meaning, in what way? For every Shira I sing, I have 3,000 Mishalim, right? So you think you came up with 150? Yeah, big whoop-de-doo. You didn't do nothing, right? I think that there's a critical lesson over here. And what is the critical lesson? So there is a point that we quote from the Vilna Gaon in this week's Points to Ponder also about the frog. And what is that? It says the Gemara Msachim, the Vilna Gaon points out, we just saw this Gemara Msachim, about Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. You know, the question is, no individual frog was commanded to go into the oven. And so since no individual frog, and that we still find that individual frogs did go into the oven, even though they weren't commanded to do so, says the Vilna Gaon, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah were able to derive the fact that their actions were the way they were supposed to be. In other words, when a person turns around and he sees to himself, ah, I want to figure out where I fit in. Am I more individual or am I more part of a community? And he says to himself, I am not putting myself ahead of my own community. Such a person is learning the secret of the tzardeya. The secret, and by the way, the antithesis of that style is the style that we find. And that was the lesson Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah were meant to learn. And that style is the antithesis of the style that we found in the land of Egypt. In the land of Egypt, Paro lived a certain lifestyle. What was that style? It's all about me. And so Hashem says to him, okay, go Moshe, I want you to develop a contrast, right? Go to Paro and say, I want my whole nation to go free. Shalach asami v'avduni, right? And if not, I'm going to show you how I'm going to go after your style of a nation. Because in your nation, Paro, your nation consists primarily of one individual, you, right? And so I want you to know, I'm going to go ahead and go after your borders. And what am I going to do with your borders? It's going to be filled with Tzvardeim, who are going to go up and down and all around, and they're going to go into your house and in Europe. It's all about you and you and you and you and you, right? But the truth is, only afterwards will it go into the nation, which is really also an extension of you. That's not the way it's supposed to live. Because when I send you a punishment, I don't just want to punish you. Instead, what I want you to do is learn a lesson. Stop being so central. Stop being so egotistical. Stop being so me-focused. And if you could do that, you could develop something better. You know why war happens? War happens because people think about themselves. And sure enough, that's what we found on the border, right? Where there were battles between the Egyptians and the Cushim. Who cared? What was the big deal? So the border was a little bit this way, a little bit that way. You ready to give up life for all of that? No, no, no. You know what's going to happen? The same Tzfardea who understands the value, he knows the secret of what is important in life. That Tzfardea is going to show you, you can make shalom sometimes just by knowing where you fit in. And by the way, that's why the Tzfardeim had to go back to their own place into the Yaor. And that was the lesson that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah had, were able to learn from the Tzfardeah. And that is the secret why there was a class system, according to the Netziv, about the Tzfardeah. Tzfardeah's message to Paro, and by the way, by extension, Tzfardeah's message to the rest of us, was the understanding that in Egypt, they were all very individually filled with gava. They were very haughty people. And the bigger the ego, the worse the makkah. But to build a nation, you don't need individuals. You need people who are dedicated to a common cause. Which brings us back to the last question that we haven't answered yet, which is this difference of opinion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and why Hashem sent the makkah and there was one Tzfardeah, right? Why did he bring out one Tzfardeah? Because one Tzfardeah is really the one represented to the person who he was supposed to get the message out to. Who was that? Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It was going to be a message that was supposed to be sent over to Paro. But what happened? By Paro, things go ahead and extend beyond to everyone else. You know, the Stipler in Birchas Peretz goes one step further. And he says there's another lesson to be gained. And what is that other lesson, he says? You know, historically, it's assumed that there was one original frog. One frog that came out. And what happened was, the frog came out, the Egyptians showed up with their entire army, right there at the border of the Nile. And as one frog came out, they whacked it. And where one came out, you whacked it, two appeared. And they whacked the two of them, four, it became four. Then it became 16. And before you know it, they were multiplying them. It all came about because of anger, right? But anger happens under what circumstances? When a person's ego is bruised. When it's all about you and your individualism, the message then becomes it's impossible to grow a nation. And so while the Tzfardea, the plague of the frogs, is as much a punishment to Paro, it also winds up being a message not only to Paro, but to you and me as well, that the frogs themselves serve an important critical function. They are the singing, knowledgeable birds of the sea. They are intelligent. They have they represent a tremendous awareness of God and a tremendous ability to work together. And that's what we saw them do in Egypt. And each one put aside his own ego to do whatever it was he was supposed to do. And that served as a basis for Jewish leaders in the future to learn from. If a frog could jump into an oven for the sake of God, then you and I can do so as well. And so while Pharaoh was supposed to be able to learn the lesson of toning down his own ego for the sake of his nation, we're also supposed to learn that we are our greatest as individuals when we are part of something bigger and greater, serving beyond our own personal needs and our own personal egos. And the best way to do that is to know and be aware of God's mission for each and every one of us. This, my dear friends, is the goal of the Tzfardeah. And this, I believe, is a lesson not only for the Egyptian, but for you and me alike. And with that, I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. And with God's help, we'll continue with some of the Makos when we meet again. Everyone have a terrific Shabbos. Stay healthy, stay comfortable, and with God's help, stay focused so that we'll all be able to go ahead and meet again soon and experience another type of redemption, a redemption from out of all of our places of individualism, a redemption where we'll all be able to sing not only the praises of King David, but all those wonderful songs that are taught to us by all of nature, when all of nature will sing and recognize the great hand of Hashem. Thank you all very much.